And right there, dear listeners, good morning, good morning, good morning. Obviously, those sounds which you obviously just heard there, which technically introduced us into this morning's session of my Sunday morning take, the sounds of the group, or actually it's a duo, because it's two guys, by the name of the Empire of the Sun, with the song Changes. Before that, you heard it from another two guys, known as the Black Keys, with the two songs Turn Blue and Fever. That technically sort of like, helped us pass into the 5 to 7 every Sunday morning session of my Sunday morning take, as we always do here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. We'll be obviously, we introduce you into the new day, specifically as your Sunday morning is about to kick off. For those of you that obviously wake up as early as yours truly, myself. And obviously you'll be in my company, as mentioned, between 5 or up from 5 up until 7 a.m. on this, so far it felt like a wonderful Sunday morning. This early, it feels like a wonderful Sunday morning. But we obviously know sometimes how, temperatures love to just dive a little bit lower in terms of setting a little bit of a chillier introduction to any particular early morning sessions. So I'm not going to, say, I hope you also have such a lovely morning. I'm not going to say that, but specifically, if you've woken up right now, good morning. And I do hope that you've got at least a little bit of a, an early morning, an early Sunday morning, sort of like, I'd like to call it an appetizer in terms of, either coffee or whatever sort of like starts you off in your day. Hope you've got that in your hand. Hope that you are obviously relaxing a little bit. And this is obviously as we're getting into this particular morning session of my Sunday morning take. Now, as we always do, we take a look at everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and a little bit of everything else in between in order to help us understand how the world works around us. And this particular Sunday morning session, actually, I was inspired by a recent discussion that, as mentioned, guys, I cannot applaud the resource known as YouTube even further. Every day it takes me to new heights, helps share new particular knowledge bases or concepts of knowledge and discussion and talking points that I probably have not seen before, have not seen anyone in Namibia potentially even cover or explore. And it just opens up my eyes every day. So on one said particular scenario, which actually helps to introduce our talking point for this morning, I came across, now this is particular, yes, it's a particular YouTube channel that I follow. It's from the gentleman himself is a somewhat of an academic, but also a sort of like a specific expert on international relations, but more on a scenario of international relations that falls on into the realm of, the relationship between NATO and Russia and other countries specifically. Because when he started off this particular channel, his YouTube channel literally sort of like, became very popular at the start of the Ukraine conflict, specifically 2022. Now, a very interesting, because he's German, but he speaks English, and he does his presentations in English, and he interviews a lot of English-speaking people as well, both from an American and from, mostly from an American perspective. And it obviously helps to set the scene specifically in terms of the various developments that we are seeing that have happened in the past 3 years since 2022. So, recently, a specific conversation popped up where he interviewed a fellow German academic. And this is a man specifically. You can look up this guy's particular sort of like his particular expertise, but they have what they have in Germany or in other parts of the world outside of Namibia, a propaganda academics. So when I say propaganda academics, I'm literally talking about an academic that has just studied the role of information dissemination under the subject matter or under the topic of propaganda. And guys, this particular sort of like conversation opened up my eyes in a completely different scenario. Because this takes media, sort of like media, what do they call it? Media monitoring to a whole new particular level, specifically in the realm of research. The conversation obviously highlighted very interesting talking points and the likes, which helps to reinforce the particular, which that's the backstory of our talk for this morning, which helps to reinforce the particular importance of this discussion that takes place this morning. Now, you have to understand, dear listeners, the realm of information as you're seeing it right now. So we're not just talking about mis and disinformation. No, that's getting more micro than ever. Misinformation and disinformation. I'll start off on another particular subject matter before we get into the conversation in earnest. There's this particular sort of like narrative I constantly hear, and it's even from some of my colleagues here at Eagle FM that I hear every time you hear the discussion around the COVID vaccine pop up. And it's still continuing, still in the United States as well. And you even see it in certain scenarios from certain people. And these are high-ranking individuals internationally as well. And even here in Namibian context, who would tell you that they don't like vaccinations. And then you sit there wondering, but, you know, and this is not just around the COVID vaccine discussions as well. Up until earlier this year, I'm talking about the first half of this year, we're in conversation with one of my siblings. It was shared with me that there was a specific expose done by Reuters International around where did all the mis and disinformation come from around the COVID-19 vaccines. And it was discovered in that specific expose. And yes, you can find it. If you Google search it right now, you will find it. It's free to read even. Specifically, Reuters discovered that which was technically propaganda, targeted propaganda, but negative propaganda, putting the COVID vaccine developments in a negative light, was specifically developed by the CIA to discredit the work that the Chinese and the Russian vaccine programs were developing. If you guys remember, when Sputnik came out and Sputnik was shared or distributed to South Africa, suddenly there popped up a talking point that homosexual men stand a greater chance of contracting HIV/AIDS, specifically if they were inoculated with the Sputnik COVID-19 vaccine coming from Russia. And then sort of like it created a negative public, discourse that took place in that particular period. Do you guys remember that particular story? Well, from what Reuters discovered, the probability is pretty high that it came from the Americans who tried to discredit the efficacy or the efficiency of Sputnik. And then if you guys remember, there was something also similar around the, what was the Chinese vaccines? The one that was shared to South Africa as well. And to Africa, was it Sinovac? The Sinovac, a batch of vaccines that was shared with Africa first, if you guys remember that, there was also a targeted propaganda campaign happening around it. Once again, to discredit the efficacy of the Chinese medical innovations in terms of combating the COVID-19 spread. Or combating the developments of COVID-19 vaccines from China and Russia. Now, these particular discussions or these particular starting points, or you can call them launch pads for that matter, actually helps us understand specifically why the realm of information dissemination has become a new kind of a battlefield. And it's a battlefield that morphs into consistently. Guys, you don't know how many times it morphs into something completely different. And every day there's a new particular, if I can call it like a bushfire or wildfire that has to be, you know, that has to be doused with some sort of water of sanity and the likes. And it gets even worse when you've got social media coming into the mix. In preparation for this morning's particular discussion, I read two particular resources. They don't technically want to open up here in front of me on the computer, you know, in terms of my literature resources, but they are technically textbooks. The first one was literally released or published this year, 2025. And it takes the analysis to a whole new level. There was a campaign, you guys know these particular TikTok challenges that come up, that pop up, that, you know, that, many people love participating in and, you know, being part of. In many cases, obviously the TikTok challenges are pretty popular because they involve a lot of people. It's across all age groups. It's a good thing. It helps everyone participate. There's an aspect of fun. There's an aspect of enjoyment participating in it, of participation in it. And it's obviously sometimes something that leads to a global good. For example, if you guys remember the John Vuligate scenario? Yeah, we all remember the John Vuligate, aspect. Or participation or challenge or whatever you want to call it. And then there was obviously the cold, what was it? The cold shower or the ice bucket. Yes, the ice bucket challenge was another particular scenario as well. However, there are also negatives. Just like you've seen or just like I listed these positives, there are also negatives that have taken place. One of the examples listed in my literature resources, sites and the literature resource that was literally released this year, this one particular textbook, cites a challenge that took place in was it just after COVID, like 2021 or 2022, or in 2024 last year? No, it was in the height of COVID. Sorry. It was in the height of COVID in the state of Florida in the United States, where a particular TikTok challenge was launched, said slap a teacher and upload your event. Now, as you can obviously hear, this is a negative challenge. This is a challenge based upon embarrassment, physical harm, and ultimately humiliation. That's what it is based upon. And the particular campaign, sort of like in the United States, in the state of Florida, alarmed various particular stakeholders as well as also public entities specifically that represent the education sector in the state of Florida, to such an extent that the teachers unions in the state of Florida, as well as also the various representatives of various school boards across the state of Florida, as well as also various representatives of governmental educational bodies in the state of Florida, literally had to release multiple statements citing the police, stating, you know, the various laws in terms of under which participants, that i.e. being learners who would initiate this particular challenge or this particular activity, could face legal repercussions in terms of that they can be arrested for assault and that they can be tried under the various particular statutes found in the state of Florida. Now, this should obviously say to you that in the realm of discussion, in the realm of propaganda and of the subject matter that we're obviously starting off with, it's technically a beast that continues to morph on a daily basis. It takes various forms. It can come through in a multitude of platforms, and it is now obviously being exacerbated so quickly by the realm of technology for mass communication purposes. Now, obviously, as we've sort of like did that small, you know, introduction for this morning's particular session here on my Sunday Morning Tech, dear listeners, we'll quickly be taking a short musical break, and from the musical break, we'll actually come back and head to the rest of this morning's program here on your number one talk radio station. And that ultimately is in terms of welcoming you to this lovely Sunday morning session. Enjoy the rest of your time in our company, in my company. We'll be back after the short musical break, and we'll see each other on the back of this.
across the Rio Grande, take me to your city lights, down by the riverside. I know you understand. Play me something down tempo, low key and rock steady. Body hit it like Kimbo, falling for you like confetti. More whiskey and ginger. Now I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle? Just one more night. Just one more night. I know a girl with a diamond crown, grew up in a border town. Took me to an empty dive. Such a pretty silhouette. Show me how to two-step. She brings me back to life. Play me something down tempo, low key and rock steady. Body hit it like Kimbo, falling for you like confetti. More whiskey and ginger. Love, I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle? Just one more night. Just one more night. Oh, nah, nah, nah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Play me something down tempo. Steady, body hitting like Kimbo, falling for you like confetti. No whiskey and ginger, oh, I'm just a beginner. What if I stayed in the middle? Just one more night. Just one more night. Ooh.
Now coming back there, dear listeners, and obviously welcoming you once again. If you've just woken up, you're on your number one talkery station, that being Eagle FM. This is my Sunday morning take here on what is or should be for all of us a lovely Sunday morning. Now, just where we left off before the musical break, and obviously the sounds there of Leon Bridges with one from his latest album and one from his previous album, and in terms of both tracks playing right there, it obviously leads us into the rest of our discussion for this morning. Now, the realm or the subject matter or the topic specifically of propaganda is one that obviously stems from a particular talking point that has taken place all around the world. Now, this is obviously as we look at the notion in terms of the evolution of the theory of propaganda, and specifically where it, you know, stems from, like in the modern human context, because you get modern human societies and you get you know, sort of like older societies before what we see now happening today. Now, after the decline of the ancient world, so we're talking about a couple of thousand years back, no elaborate systematic study of propaganda actually appeared for many, many centuries. And this is specifically not until the Industrial Revolution that literally took place in the 1800s. Now, this is obviously as the Industrial Revolution had brought about mass production and had actually raised hopes of immensely high profits through mass marketing. So you also got targeted communication streams or mechanisms. And it obviously meant, you know, that the idea was that you wanted a lot of people to technically buy, consume, and use what you're producing as well. Now, near the beginning of the 20th century, that being at the start of 1900, researchers began to undertake studies of motivations of many types of consumers and of their responses to various kinds of salesmanship, advertising, and the other marketing techniques. Now, what I did not know technically, guys, was from the discussion that stemmed from between the two German between the two German academics, the guys that I recently, you know, the YouTube video that I watched, the discussion, was that specifically this was something that was begun by one of the earliest leaders and developers of the school of thought and the profession of psychology, Sigmund Freud. And supposedly also, you know, a nephew of him. That's what they mentioned, these two particular gentlemen in their discussion. So, when you hear this particular statement that I just cited to you, that researchers began to undertake studies of motivations, of the motivations of many types of consumers, and of their responses to the various kinds of stimuli or activities to stimulate some sort of a reaction, it gets us into the realm of the subject that I studied back on university once, and that any psychology student on university would be exposed to, is the subject or the content of consumer buyer behavior. And consumer buyer behavior is literally that particular subject matter, which states you've got to find the motivation as to why people react to certain particular stimuli. This can be an advert, this can be a promotion, this can be a specific kind of a targeted campaign, and it's usually coming and it usually manifests or is being, almost like a transport medium, how it is being, you know, spread or distributed is through a mass communication platform. Now, from the early 1930s onwards, there have been consumer surveys, much in the manner of the public opinion surveys that you sometimes come about. Now, almost every conceivable variable affecting consumers' behaviors, beliefs, suggestibilities, and behavior have been investigated for every kind of group, subgroup, and a culture in the major capitalist countries. Now, consumers' wants and their habits were studied for a limited time in the same ways as in the socialist countries. partly to promote economic efficiency and partly to prevent political unrest as well. Because this is obviously about knowing, what annoyance factors are there. Yes, guys, researchers go and ask these particular questions. What annoys you? What don't you like? How did you respond here and how did you respond there? Now, data on the wants and the habits of voters as well as consumers are now being gathered in the same elaborate ways in many parts of the world as well. Because at the beginning, in the early 21st century, many websites, especially social networking platforms and internet service providers, as well as thousands of applications developed for use with browsers and smartphones, collected massive amounts of personal data about the consumer who used them. Generally, without their informed consent. That's the reason why, you know, you get the cookies and you are being told, yes, we track your particular, your movements on the website. If you visit certain particular websites, you get informed. You now get those things. And if you say, I don't give consent, then you get limited access to the website. And if you say, yes, you know, you give consent to, you know, the collection of said particular, tracking data around you, you get full access to the website or the platform. Just so that you guys know, there are these particular trade-offs that also occur. Now, obviously, such data potentially included the consumer's ages, the consumer's genders, the marital status of the consumer, the medical histories of the consumer, the employment history, and other financial information, personal and professional interests, political affiliations, and even opinions. Yes, and that's usually for the social media sites as well. And even geographic locations on a minute-by-minute basis. Now, the collected data was then sold to information or data brokers, who then further aggregated it and sold it to advertising firms who in turn used it to identify potential customers for their corporate clients and to make commercial messages more effective. Now, I'd like to interject there slightly because there's a little bit a aspect of a negative scenario happening because of a negative event that occurred in the United States, not this week, the week before. So 2 weeks back, dear listeners, if you did not know, if you don't know about the developments that actually came out of the United States, was that the very publicized shooting and death of the political commentator Charlie Kirk. He was a conservative religious what do you call those guys? A conservative religious. He was a Christian conservative public speaker, yes. So what Charlie Kirk used to do, guys, was that he would go to university campuses, because university campuses are usually the bedrocks, the foundations of public discourse and freedom of expression. And specifically in the United States, their freedom of expression is slightly different from our freedom of expression, just so that you guys know. Because under our freedom of expression, you may not incite hate or certain particular things. And in the United States, you can have hate speech under their freedom of expression. Just so that you guys know this. How I know this is there's another YouTube channel that is conducted by a lawyer, an American lawyer. And, you know, certain particular concepts that we have that you find in other parts of the world sometimes have various additions and various, if I can call it like, expansions on these concepts, in comparison to what you would see in a Namibian context. And in the American context, they do allow for hate speech because it is considered just as the idea itself. However, in the United States, if hate speech is coupled or added onto the act of committing said particular, let's say, an act that, you know, allows for the meaning you say you are doing what you said you would do, then it starts becoming a crime. Then it starts becoming an attention aspect for the law authority, the law enforcement to come after the said particular individual. So, as we're obviously sitting with those particularly unique scenarios, I did not know that obviously social, but I assumed it would be this bad. So social media in the United States and in other parts of the world went berserk, obviously. Firstly, the negative reactions towards the Charlie Kirk's particular very, very violent, the very violent video that exists on social media. I think it has been taken down by now. As he was shot and unfortunately died from the particular gunshot wound. Because what he was doing technically, dear listeners, was what he did was he would go to university campuses, put up a little booth, and then he would have debates with anyone about anything that's currently taking place in the United States or in the realm of public life in the United States. And he would engage with a lot of people, which is a very novel idea. It's a very novel idea. It's a very good idea that he did. Now, obviously, you guys would have heard of the adage of the particular talking point of just because we do not agree with each other on the same particular points does not mean, does not equal, nor equate that we actually should, you know, hate each other or have negative, you know, particular ideas or feelings against each other. Because people are allowed to be different and to be unique and to be individualistic because it's their right. Now, obviously, a lot of things kicked off from there, from the point of his particular death. There has been a significant media storm around the man's death. It went very far, very, very far. To such extents, to such points specifically that there are people that technically sort of like misconstrue the aspect of freedom of expression in other parts of the world. But I wanted to just to highlight that particular talking point to you primarily because there's a significant campaign taking place currently right now in the United States on people who celebrated the death of Charlie Kirk. I'm sorry, guys, for highlighting that particular talking point, but there are bad people in this world. There are just bad actors, bad characters, and for some reason, they just don't know when to either, you know, just take it easy, don't react, don't do anything dumb, and they literally go and do the said particular dumb act in terms of, for example, celebrating the death of a man. When you had to look at these particular prompts and discussions, there was a lot of tracking going on. Even Elon Musk was the social media captains, these technology captains, they're now literally also busy clamping down on bad actors. And said particular bad actors, dear listeners, they also provide for the not so good discourse on the various platforms, the various social media platforms. Now, I'm not taking any sides, just so that you know. I always try to maintain as much objectivity, neutrality, centrality as possible so that you can get an unfiltered. Well, obviously it'll be filtered, you know, I won't share foul language, you know, but I'll just carry over the certain particular basic, necessary details that you would, you know, that you would need in order for you to help understand the concept and discussion. Now, stemming from that particular scenario, the notion has obviously been that a rising tide of consumer resistance and voter skepticism has obviously led to various attempts at consumer education being conducted. voter education being conducted, counter-propaganda taking place, as well as also proposals for regulatory legislation, as obviously that, you know, there should be these concerted campaigns to educate people, you know, the broader public at hand, to understand what messages they're actually getting. Now, that's obviously good, because the discussion between the two German academics that I watched recently cited that you sometimes get not so obvious messaging, and that I'm not going to say subconscious. No, I'm saying not so obvious messaging, and then you get very obvious messaging. Most of these particular discussions and most such particular proposals in the United States have been unavailing, for that matter, as well. This is obviously taking the most, obvious platform in the world. But as far back as the early 1920s, there has been development of an awareness among many social critics that the extension of the vote and of enlarged purchasing power to more and more people of, as they would call it, the ignorant or ill-educated, meant larger and larger opportunities for both demagogic and public-spirited propagandists to make headway by using fictions and myths, utopian appeals, and the noble lie. The noble lie, you can probably equate that to the boy who cried wolf story, if you guys know that story. And it's obviously to try and sell a specific perspective. It's obviously to try and sell a specific scenario, viewpoint, or dimension. Now, the interest was specifically aroused not only by the lingering horror of World War I, yes, and of the post-war settlements, but also by the publication of Ivan Pavlov's experiments on conditioned reflexes and of analyses of human motivations by the various psychoanalysts of the time. Sigmund Freud's The Group Psychology and the Analysis of the Ego of 1922 was particularly relevant to the study of leaders, propagandists, and followers, as were the works of Walter Lippmann's Public Opinion of 1922 and The Phantom Public of 1925. Now, this is specifically in reference to that work by Freud that the two Germans, experts in the recent discussion that I watched cited the group psychology and the analyses of the ego. And it obviously speaks, dear listeners, of the character. It speaks towards the particular disposition of the various experimental, participants that participated in the experiments, and what was obviously collected. Now, in 1927, an American political scientist by the name of Harold Laswell published a now famous book, known as Propaganda Technique in the World War. Now, this was a dispassionate description and an analysis of the massive propaganda campaigns that were conducted by all major belligerents in World War I, which was true. If you guys did not know, the countries were conducting back then what they would call it today, it would be deemed as war propaganda. But in the First World War context, it's actually something that comes through from the preceding wars in Europe that built up to the First World War. What happened was that there was another particular documentary that I watched that was focused on the realm of why did, this is now just before Germany's unification in the 1800s. And before Germany's unification, it was actually known as Prussia. Why did Prussia lose? It was a specific war that they lost against the French. It was a border war with the French. Why did they lose the war if they continued to communicate to the Prussian public, which were you know, today the Germans. So the Prussian public regarding supposed successes and battle and victories on the battlefield. So why did they lose a war if they were continuously supposedly winning battles? Now, this specific scenario helps to, will help you understand how in many cases it is literally to keep public motivation high about the prestige of the army, the military exploits of the nation. And secondly, and this, it's always helpful, guys, to have a political, what do you call it, a political science, expert in your family that can sometimes help you understand certain particular developments. The use of propaganda in many cases is also there to help with mass mobilization of the civilian public. So what am I talking about? Well, Namibia is not a warmongering country. We've never been a warmongering country. However, you get other countries literally in the European context, in the Asian context, maybe in the South American context, that literally have these capabilities. They still have conscription after you become 18 or after you finish high school. You can look at South Korea, you can look at Japan, you can look at Germany, you can look at, what's the other country's name? Germany, there is, I think Austria, there is Austria. I remember because with Austria, the academic that visited, for public discussion in 2023, that came to talk about sports science here in Namibia at one of the local universities here in Namibia. And he laid out the realm in terms of how, athletes, how, you know, I almost wanted to say the job description, but it's literally the profession of a professional athlete in Austria, how it is sometimes encouraged, but from which particular sector? Now, most of Austria's Olympic stars, guess what, guys? They all come from the Austrian army. In many cases, you have to join the Austrian army in order to become a national athlete in Austria. And Austria's number one sports are predominantly all winter sports. They are skiing. There's that other cross-country skiing sport where you have a rifle and then you have to ski, you know, like distances, take shots at various locations, which are obviously, you know, tallied up by the judges, and then you continue with your cross-country trek. It's literally a winter sport. And this particular gentleman explained it that, for you to get achieve a professional sports career, the only platform, the only sector in the Austrian economy that can help you with this is by joining the Austrian army, which is a little bit sad because, you know, you can technically see that the Austrian army also plays as this particular custodian of, the country's entire, sports, you know, complex, as well as also that it has this particular significant, influence. Now, if you don't become successful up to a certain particular age, wherein you become actually like, you know, a really competitive, force in the realm of the sports discipline that you're doing, then you'll be given a choice. Drop the program or become a soldier, or drop the program and you can thus now exit the army. Which obviously, you know, sits an odd scenario. But yeah, this is what some countries actually do in the world. Now, Laswell's particular analysis of the propaganda technique in the World War discussion was, as he obviously followed with studies of communist propaganda and of many other particular forms of communication. Within a few years, a great many other social scientists, along with historians, journalists, and psychologists, were producing a wide variety of publications purporting to analyze military, political, and commercial propaganda of many types. Now, during the particular Nazi period and during World War II and the subsequent Cold War between the United States and the Soviet Union, a great many researchers and writers, both skilled and unskilled, scholarly and unscholarly, were employed by governments, political movements, and business firms to conduct propaganda. Some of those who had specific training designed very carefully controlled experiments or intelligence operations attempting to quantify data on appeals of various types of propaganda to given reactors. Now, here's where I interject with another particular sort of like case study again. In that same discussion between the two German academics, a startling statistic popped up. Now, guys, I've mentioned before here on Eagle FM that I discovered back in last year, 2024, I was doing like basic research just regarding something. And I just decided, you know what, how many public, you know, public broadcasting companies does Germany have? And when I threw it into that Google search, I got like 14 companies. These are 14 NBCs. Let me say that again. They've got 14 NBCs. Not one with subsidiaries. These are 14 of them spread across the country in Germany. The most obvious one we obviously all see and hear sometimes about is the one known as Deutsche Welle or DW. But the two academics cited that, or the one who was being interviewed by the other one, cited specifically that he discovered that there is almost 60% more public relations officials in Germany than journalists in Germany. So the split in terms of communication practitioners in Germany itself, you get 60% of them are public relations officials, and the other 40% are journalists. And that many of the journalists in the 40% realm are economically, they are economically insecure, meaning they don't have fixed employment contracts. Most of them are freelance, and they are obviously open to primarily being, you know, immediately fired, losing their employment, stuff like that, and, you know, obviously having a negative repercussion in that scenario. Now, before we continue, dear listeners, we're quickly going to take a short musical break. And after the musical break, we're going to come back and head into what would be our second half of this morning's discussion here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And this is my Sunday morning take.
Stupid again. too much, a working lunch, a crashing down, so don't wait up. If I don't text, my phone's just dead. I've got that thing, I'm sure I said, and I know that you know, and we both just play along. Just one more stupid thing that I have done. Put money in your pocket at last. It makes you think you're more than you are. You're just another sucker for the dream. More or less than you have ever been. But now it's little lies and alibis in the second phone. Make it home, I'm working late. You know I hate to miss the kids' bedtime again. I drank too much, a working lunch, a crashing down, so don't wait up. If I don't text, my phone's just dead. I've got that thing, I'm sure I said. Make you look like a joke and we both just play along. Just one more stupid thing.
When she looked me in the eye, said you fancy a gunfight, come and meet me outside. She walks like an angel, she's the devil in white. I can only follow when I should run for my life. In my heart, always it was her in the dark, cause it's true. I fall hard, and I don't wanna let her know. I know how the story goes. It's written on the wall. I've seen it all before. The hunger when she calls. My heart won't understand why it's bloodstains on my hands. She's a stone cold killer. See, I begged and I borrowed just to hide from the light. I'm lost in this battle, I'm out of my mind. It was all I could save for, just to keep me alive. I'm drowning my sorrows, she's soon out of sight. In my heart, always it was her in the dark, cause it's true. I fall hard, and I don't wanna let her know. I know how the story goes. It's written on the wall, I've seen it all before. The hunger when she calls. My heart won't understand
And coming back there from the sounds specifically of Saint Raymond with the song Killer, obviously not implying the particular negative aspect of things. So obviously gets us into the second half of this morning's program, specifically here on my Sunday morning take on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. And if you've just woken up, good morning, welcome, and obviously stay tuned with here with us as we obviously get through the interesting talking point coming through for this morning. Now, this is obviously as, you know, things have moved on, and obviously the study of this new particular phenomena, well, it's technically not new because it had been observed since the 1800s, specifically around consumer buyer behavior, the motivations around, you know, what makes people buy, consume, and react to certain particular aspects of marketing, advertising, sales strategies, and the likes. Now, the study of propaganda advanced a long way on the road from law to science. By the second half of the 20th century, several hundred more or less scholarly books and thousands of articles had also shed substantial light on the psychology, the techniques, and even on the effects of propaganda campaigns, major and minor. Eventually, nearly every significant government, political party, interest group, social movement, or large business firm in the advanced countries had developed its own core of specialized researchers, propagandists, and even opinion managers, sometimes referred to as information specialists, lobbyists, legislative representatives, or vice presidents in charge of public relations. Some have become members of parliaments, cabinets, and even corporate boards of directors. The most expert among them sometimes are highly skilled or trained, or both, in history, psychiatry, politics, social psychology, survey research, and statistical inference. Now, many of the bigger and wealthier propaganda agencies conduct overtly and covertly, overtly meaning obvious and covertly meaning not so obvious, elaborate observations and opinion surveys among samples of the leaders, the middle strata, and the rank and file of all social groups, big and little, whom they hope to influence. Now, they also tabulate many kinds of data concerning those contents of the internet, the press, film, television, and organizational media that reach given groups. They chart the responses of reactors through time by statistical formulas. They also conduct symbol campaigns and image-building operations with mathematical calculation using large quantities of data. To the ancient, and specifically that, to the ancient art of rhetoric, the technique of orators have been added the techniques of the psychopolitical analyst and the media specialist and the know-how of the administrators of giant advertising agencies, public relations firms, and governmental ministries of information that employ armies of analytic specialists and symbol handlers. Symbol, not simple. I know, guys. Sometimes my, you know, what they call that pronunciation sort of like does blend the terms. But it has to do a lot specifically with how a user, an audience member, reacts to a message. How this message is then transmitted. How it is shared or disseminated. The distribution of said particular message obviously has to be based upon the presence of certain particular mass media platforms being present in order for certain things to happen. Now, it is a commonplace among the highly educated that people in the mass and even people on high educational and social levels often react more favorably to utopian myths, wishful thinking, and even non-rational residues of earlier experiences than they do to the sober analysis of facts. I don't want to throw in religion there, but I know religion would be there. I know it would be there. This is obviously in terms of as the average citizens who may be aware of being duped are not likely to have enough education, time, or economic means to defend themselves against the massive organizations of opinion managers and hidden persuaders. Also, to affect them, this is now, you know, many of the average person, to be affected, they would have to act through large organizations themselves and to use, to some extent, the very means used by those they seek to control. Now, the still greater curse of bigness that may evolve in the future is viewed with increasing concern by many politically conscious people. Now, this is obviously as you get to the notion in terms of what goes on specifically in propaganda. Now, remember, we have just been talking about the impacts of propaganda, how it has been viewed and how it has been researched and observed. Contemporary propagandists employing behavioral theory tend to analyze their problem in terms of at least the following 10 questions. What are the goals of the propaganda, meaning what changes are to be brought about, in whom, and when? What are the present and expected conditions in the world social system? What are the present and expected conditions in each of the subsystems of the world social system, meaning such as the international regions, the nations, the lesser territories, and interest groups? What should distribute or who should distribute the propaganda and the propagandists or the agents? What symbols should be used? What media should be used? Which reactors should the propaganda be aimed at? And how can the effects of propaganda be measured? And by what countermeasures can opponents neutralize or suppress the propaganda itself? And finally, how can such countermeasures be measured and dealt with? Now, in the present state of social science, this 10-part problem statement, you know, these 10 questions that I just now mentioned to you, can be solved with only moderate confidence with respect to any really major propaganda campaign. Even if one has a great deal of money for research, yet, if propagandists are to proceed as rationally as possible, they need the best answers that are available. So obviously, it's about setting goals. The goals, specifically in any particular targeted campaign, are fairly easy to define specifically, and that's obviously if said particular propagandist simply wants to sell a relatively safe, useful, and simple good or service. But when propagandists aim to convert great numbers of people to a religion or a new social order or to induce extremely dangerous collective action like a war or a revolution, however, the definition of the goals becomes highly complex. And we've seen this specifically with the war on terror and the invasion of Iraq in 2001, or was it 2003? There's also a similar particular scenario, religiously, when the, what was that religious group's name that Tom Cruise was part of? Or is actually still part of? Scientology. Oh yes, Scientology. What you guys don't, or probably would have heard, maybe, like on the margins, or like, you know, in hidden scenarios, was the influence that this new religion had specifically on the media specifically. So this was now in the UK and other parts of Europe and in America. I have not seen instances in the South African context, just to let you know. Hence the reason why I will ignore South Africa. So what happened was that there were a few, let's rather say, brave journalists who were trying to understand what's, you know, whether or not this religion that Tom Cruise was part of was acting like a cult. This was literally sort of like the hypothesis that many of the journalists trying to look into Scientology wanted to start from. Was it acting like a cult? Because they heard rumors of the entity that's now the organization that represents this particular religion, had a particular behavioral tendency to interfere in the lives of many of its followers specifically. Let's, for example, say if the person or the individual decides, I don't want to be part of this anymore, I'd like to go my own way, I'd like to live my life. And then various particular sort of like negative instances and things supposedly happen in and around the person's life. And when the person shares it with someone that they can, you know, talk to confide in, then the person being confided in hears about abuses, hears about bullying, hears about, negative social behaviors taking place within this said particular religious entity known as Scientology, and so on and so forth. And then obviously the Scientology guys would come out with their own particular sort of like counter public relations, reaction. You know, they would issue statements, they would obviously go on TVs, they would obviously go on talk shows and podcasts and defend their position, which obviously any of them would do. I mean, that's what public relations officers know how to do very well sometimes. In a Namibian context, in a Namibian context, you know, there's a lot to, there's a lot, that our guys have to step up to. But Namibia is not so big. Let me just also state that we're not that big. However, it then blew wide open when one of Tom Cruise's ex-wives, Katie Holmes, if you guys remember that actress, when she then publicly filed for divorce from Tom Cruise, and people then went and looked into what were in the, you know, the divorce negotiations and the likes, and they wanted to understand what was actually going on, and they wanted to see, you know, what were the influencing factors here? And then they extracted various accusations that came through from Katie Holmes's particular side. And specifically, Tom Cruise was using the Scientology religion in many negative ways that she did not like. And she didn't actually want to be part of this enterprise or this activity or this movement. She didn't feel that it, you know, represented her particular principles. And it just took things further. Now, remember, guys, in the US and in Europe, you get something known as a paparazzi. This is a media practitioner that just is close to the level of being a stalker. And they stalk people. Hence the reason why we've got privacy laws, or privacy laws here in Namibia and other parts of the world. And, yeah, when it comes to paparazzi, things get a little bit weird. And that's obviously where this talking point also stemmed from, in terms of where you sometimes get certain particularly religious entities that have the knack for acting a bit weird, and then they try to do weird things, and then, you know, people then start saying and commenting by saying, hey, but doesn't this religious entity doesn't it look like just a little bit too culty? You know, it starts to look like a cult scenario. So that was one of the settings. And then you obviously have, like I mentioned, war movements. That war on terror, and then the war of the invasion of Iraq. Not the war on terror, but the invasion of Iraq was a big negative. still excited today, as probably, if you had to go look up at many people today would tell you specifically who would be, what are their names? Certain particular academics, and I always go for neutral academics. Many of them would cite to you that this potentially was an unnecessary war. Obviously, one of the masters or the brains behind that second invasion of Iraq, if you guys remember, was the guy who played, no, not who played, Christian Bale, the actor, played him as a character. What was it? George W. Bush's vice president. Was it Dick Cheney? Dick Cheney, that was the CEO of a guns company, and so forth. And you guys don't know that, but there's a movie that Christian Bale starred in as Dick Cheney. And it's literally propaganda. It's literally propaganda. Go and watch any particular Michael Bay movie from the United States. Michael Bay, the director, except for the Bad Boys movies, the three Bad Boys movies, or the four. Are they three or four? Except for those movies. They're all, the Transformer ones. Is propaganda for the American army, because there's a lot of American army components used in his Transformer movies. And there's literally a documentary that I watched in terms of where the American army has a public relations arm willing to work with the movie industry of Hollywood of the United States in terms of projecting a positive image of the American armed forces. Literally, they've got a budget and everything, and they even allow movie directors to use what's the thing's name? Hardware in the movies. Obviously for stunts, and obviously for, you know, the theatrics and the drama and the stuff that we love to see this side. Now, dear listeners, symbolism, not symbolism, symbolism. Symbolism is a very powerful tool. It is super powerful. And symbolism is always incorporated in advertising, specifically print and in visual. So I'm talking about anything in a print format or anything where you've got a picture to deal with. Symbolism is powerful. Symbolism in advertising is way more powerful. Symbolism in even a movie is just tenfold more powerful. Now, obviously, you would see various scenarios in terms of propagandists that may find it hard to specify, even to themselves, what the exact beliefs, values, or even actions they want to bring about, and by what points in time, among different sorts of people. Now, a very large and firmly held complexes of values are involved, such as prestige. So I cited to you the American Army in Michael Bay movies. Peace of mind. Well, sometimes that's usually advertising campaigns coming through from financial companies. Income, and even life itself, or the military security of an entire nation or regions. Even in modern times, the annihilation of all humankind. Yes, there's a doom factor sometimes communicated. If you have not known, the doom factor comes through from the current discourse taking place in American politics. American and NATO politics. The doom factor. Now, I recently read a very lovely quote from a historic figure, which stated that history exists to tell us that we don't pay attention to history. I don't know if it's the most profound statement I've ever found in my life, but today, it literally is. Now, reason being for that particular statement in its own right, has been that in many cases you find propaganda in and around, a war or a state of tension, you know, from between two countries. And in such scenarios, obviously, it has been that in such a situation, the state of annihilation of all humankind, a mass of intricate and thorny value dilemmas are actually put forward, or they sometimes also arise, which are specifically these dilemmas: is military or revolutionary victory worth the price of economic ruin? They always balance this up. This was the scenario with the pipeline's name on the other side of Germany in the Baltic Sea, Nord Stream 2. The second question that you've got to look at is, can a desired degree of individual liberty be achieved without too much loss of social equality? This obviously means, you know, are we looking at some aspect of martial law, that obviously infringes upon individual rights? Obviously, this is in a context of, are you currently in a state of conflict, in a state of aggression with another country? That's the context you've got to look at it under. Is a much quicker achievement of goals worth a much greater amount of human suffering? So they always have this trade-off aspect taking place. Are war crimes to be committed in order to win a battle? And in short, what are the propagandists willing to risk for what, across what periods of time? These are pertinent questions, dear listeners, because we produce in Namibia, for example, a lot of political scientist graduates. We are obviously also producing now international relations graduates. We will have more of these people coming about, and a lot of them obviously will have, in many cases, and I realized this, you know, with a recent discussion in terms of, technically socialism doesn't work. It has never worked, dear listeners. Socialism has primarily only brought about ruin and great suffering in many countries, and the examples are abound. Helmut and I, we discussed it recently in that that home run session that we had on Thursday or Wednesday, the democracy discussion, where our speaker, that being the former Prime Minister Sara Kugengelwa Amadila, was interviewed by the Brookings Institute, the Africa Studies Division of the Brookings Institute, in a virtual engagement. And they were asking particular questions, you know, what makes Namibia so unique? What makes Namibia so good? And it's actually a good thing that we are this silent. We have our own issues, but we're like the silent, good example that just persists, that just keeps on rolling. We don't overperform. We sometimes perform averagely. We have negative issues, but we don't go and stand out. The only thing that's obviously making us stand out a lot is the oil and gas prospect, and then obviously the green hydrogen prospect. Because last year at the Summit for the Future and Pact for the Future launch between former President Mbumba and the former German Chancellor, Olaf Scholz, it obviously put Namibia on a different level on the global map. If you don't know what the Pact for the Future, Summit of the Future, technically was all about, I advise you go read it up. Go try and understand it. But Namibia, just after the launch of that pact and that event, the Summit of the Future, if you ever had the opportunity of just observing the actions on the side of the Germans in terms of how our president, our director general from the National Planning Commission, and obviously the entourage that went with President Bumba to Germany from, they flew from New York to Germany, to Hamburg, you know, obviously to go and continue various particular high level engagements. If you observed that period in itself, the Germans were running wild with the media coverage. They were running wild. Guys, I'm really trying my best, ne, not to over exaggerate the exposure that they did, but you guys should have seen the Hamburg dialogue scenario that the former director general Obert Kanchode participated in. I mean, he was allowed to just speak for like 3 minutes or 5 minutes on the one panel discussion, which was, they literally just went on for like, each person had like, because the one participant was the undersecretary general from the UN. It's an English guy. It's an Englishman. Literally, he's a man. He's a Brit. He's an Englishman. The one undersecretary general that participated, and the other two people were, they were also European, but one was German and the other one was from somewhere else. And literally, the particular talking points that they were talking about was predominantly the prominence of the summit of the future and this pact of the future engagement between Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere, an advanced economy like Germany and a Global South member like Namibia, joining hands to work to a common good. Now, we are literally working towards a common good, which is a green transition for Namibia and a green transition for Germany, which is obviously the green hydrogen discussion. Now, what I'm actually doing, guys, is I'm literally telling you about the level of exposure that I've been exposed to, that you've been exposed to, coming through in terms of a potential social and economic good. But nothing really comes good from an activity that the one partner, specifically that now being the Germans, are exacerbating on the other side of the world. Meaning the frosty relations between Germany and Russia, or NATO and Russia, should I say. Because for some reason, I don't know, everyone in the world can see that Ukraine is a lost cause. And there's so much propaganda on the likes of BBC and on BBC World News and on CNN International and on Sky News International that I don't understand. What people don't realize is that it's technically a lost cause. You can't have positive media coverage around something that everyone can see is like, this is an unfair fight. You guys know this. Which is a negative. A country that is on the Security Council. Where? In what world? So, the particular discussions obviously are, you know, are very interesting, because you obviously have to be a student of human and world affairs, and anyone can do this. Any one of you, you know, just observe in your community, in your local media, which obviously also includes us as Eagle FM, because we also help with information dissemination. But observe the various particular, you know, just what you see happening in your communities, in your, if I can call it, your purviews of awareness, as well as also scenarios in terms of how you see other people interpreting the same information that you were exposed to, and if they are seeing something completely different. I'm telling you guys, I've told you this multiple times. I've bumped into so many journalists here in Namibia that do not understand what green hydrogen is actually about. And so many journalists I've bumped into here in Namibia who do not understand specifically the aspects in terms of the Dutch curse discussion. Remember, I made a statement in this past week and in last week. I repeated the same statement twice. That we are technically, as Namibia, we are already in a Dutch curse setting. Why? There's only one sector that's outperforming most of the other sectors. Not the tourism sector, the mining sector. The mining sector has the highest volumes of inflowing investments. It's got the most activity going on, as well as also it's the most dominant activity in our export discussions with our largest trade partners, the mining sector. Now, this has to show you, dear listeners, primarily, when I make a statement, it's because I've had to go and read something, go and analyze it, had to weigh it up in terms of its trend, for how long has this particular thing been here, and then you position it against what is the particular sort of like influence that this particular item has. So I didn't want to say negative or positive. I said just the particular influence. The particular influence is literally, guys, we are literally the communication that's taking place in and around oil and gas and green hydrogen in Namibia. It has a mass appeal. It is being massively communicated. And it is being massively, the buy-in is greatly positioned so that every Namibian is made to think that they can participate in both sectors. If you've never seen propaganda, guys, we are currently, as Namibia, we are having our own propaganda phase. It is for good. But there are going to be some people that will be let down, that will be disappointed, that unfortunately won't participate. However, on that note, dear listeners, we're quickly going to step into a short musical break. After the musical break, we're going to come back. It'll technically leave us with the last 10 minutes of today's program here on your number one talk radio station. This is my Sunday morning take. You are on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. Do enjoy the rest of what is left of my Sunday morning take in yours truly's company. That's myself, Dwight. We'll see each other after these two short musical items that are about to step up and ultimately sort of like lighten up the mood slightly for us in terms of that deep dive in analysis that we've just recently done. We'll be back on the other side of a little bit of, Rodrigo Amarante with a little bit of Mare.
gelato a pomodoro, un castello di cacao, Trevignese, caffè, 33 Maroma 6.
E poi,
sì, loro si cosa vuoi, pilotare un autogel, far la doccia di champagne, con un fracco coco e sbancare il casino.
E poi, girando a Caricita, chi la cerca non ce l'ha.
As we come back there, dear listeners, specifically there from the sounds of a gentleman by the name of Till Bronner, obviously bringing us that particular jazz, you know, chill sounds. To be honest, guys, I've been listening subconsciously to a lot of particular jazz artists. My most favorite one is the group Jamiroquai, not the guy. I thought the guy was Jamiroquai. The band's name is Jamiroquai. But they are technically a jazz fusion outfit. And, you know, jazz just has a different setting in terms of, you know, it takes music in a different direction than just listening to a whole bunch of pop and then hip hop and then obviously just rock. Just jazz just takes it. Just takes the side, you know? Just the side. However, coming back from that sort of like slight deviation in terms of welcoming you back to what would be the last 10 minutes of this morning's particular engagement here on my Sunday morning take, where we left off just in the realm of understanding the discussion itself of, propaganda's particular impacts has obviously been the aspects of, you know, what we see, what you sometimes will obviously be able to engage in, and some of the particular developments, you know, in the modern context of what's going on. Now, the present and expected conditions in the world social system is one of the sort of like further subject areas in this discussion of propaganda, which under modern conditions, each act of propaganda is geared to have effects in several parts of the world. Some of these may boomerang unexpectedly against the propagandists themselves, unless they can visualize the global system and its components and anticipate the problems that may arise. The global system, however, or moreover, is in many cases a continuously changing platform. As population, trade, travel, education, and technology evolve, new centers of political, cultural, and economic power emerges. Just that single statement itself has been proven correct in the past months since Donald Trump was inaugurated on 21 June. What was it, 21 March? Or no, 21 January. Or was it 20 January? 20 January this year. Donald Trump recently, like 2 weeks back, signed an executive order to change his Ministry of Defense to the Ministry of War. The name, just to change the name of the ministry, which is known as the departments. They've got departments, not ministry, not ministries. And the motivation outlined in there of why they were doing this in this executive order points towards a wartime setting wherein they actually had this label for this particular agency of the American government. This wartime label was based upon a notion when there was a lot of conflict going on and there was a lot of tension in the world, and there was the propensity to literally start a global conflict was just an insult away, just a thinking, just a thought away. Yes, guys. I mean, the failed Austrian painter himself began a global conflict because he wanted to achieve lost glory, lost national glory of his nation. The First World War was started because one guy's cousin, the same cousin, was cousin to the King of England, was cousin to the Emperor of Russia, was cousin to, there was another guy he was also cousin to, which I forget, but was it the Dutch King or the Belgian King? But he was cousin, the same guy was also cousin to someone. He gets shot somewhere in Zagreb, which is modern day Croatia today. And now we must have a world war. Now, you need to understand these particular discussions, dear listeners, because today we are seeing certain particular things happen once again from people who do not read history. Who don't read history. And I believe in reading history so as to know what not to do. But it seems like we love voting in people. We love following people who don't follow history. But they had history as a subject. They don't follow history. Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, it obviously should tell you we are potentially repeating history in some cases again through certain acts. The second aspect has been the particular propensity of certain actions taking place around the world. For example, more and more, this is as everyone cites it, you know, through the trade conflict that Donald Trump once again reignited between the US. Well, he did not reignite it. He just took it a step further between the US and China, because obviously he started it in his first term, if you guys remember, in 2016. Joe Biden just continued it. So America didn't have a different position under Joe Biden. It just didn't become as obvious under Joe Biden. And Donald Trump took it to another level when he came back, start of this year. If you guys don't know, many of the academics are citing that the Americans technically are viewing China as an enemy and not Russia. I don't know what's going on, why such rhetoric and words would be used, But this technically should make any particular person scary or, you know, fear for the future, the global future of this planet, because it actually should tell you that the particular thinking out there, the particular mindsets out there, the particular perspective of people in terms of how they approach various things out there in the world is scary. The economist Jeffrey Sachs loves using a phrase. Now, I haven't looked it up yet in terms of trying to understand where this thing comes from, but he uses a phrase known as game theory. And I heard it recently from the two German academics that I listened to on that other particular podcast. They also referenced a similar thing by a similar name as war games theory. Now, game theory and war games theory seems to be the same thing, and it is something that is trained at the elite colleges and universities in the United States and in Europe. I'd suggest you also, if you know, if you're interested in the subject matter, go and look this particular talking point up. Go and look up this particular subject matter. Try to understand it, because it is a very damaging subject matter towards global peace, towards a global good. I mean, the other day I just came from a public lecture hosted by a Polish academic at NUST. That was now on Thursday. And he spoke about, you know, marketing for social innovations, which speaks to socially good activities. Now, marketing technically is an aspect of propaganda, if you guys didn't realize that. I myself know this already, because I've seen negative marketing messages being placed in mass media communication platforms. And it's to achieve a particular goal, obviously, and obviously to influence a particular reaction from the audience and to achieve certain particular targets from the paying sponsor of the message. And you obviously also have to see that in many cases, if you look at social innovations and the marketing activity positioned around them, this obviously speaks to the opposite, that they are trying to achieve a good outcomes and, you know, try to get to achieve good or positive reactions from the target audience that they are obviously, you know, being positioned close to. But there is so much in the realm of politics that is based upon the negative of things. Dear listeners, I cannot stress this enough. It's one of the reasons why I love listening to centrist academics that do not spout nor reflect particular, you know, perspectives, who are not biased or who are not partial, meaning impartial, they're the opposite. Biased obviously is unbiased. Who are not objective in their particular discussions. I don't listen to people who are unbiased. I don't listen to people who are biased, impartial. No, they are partial. Nor are they completely, you know, subject to be influenced on a particular talking point. Reason being, they're convincing you of something without showing you evidence of said particular convincing aspects, as well as also they don't show you or convince you on the positives. The positives they are selling you on are the positives that they believe are positives, but you can clearly see that it's not a positive for anyone. Now, on that particular note, dear listeners, it does bring us up to the end for this morning's engagement here on my number one, on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. This has been my Sunday morning take here on what is this lovely Sunday morning, because it technically does seem to be lovely. You know, the rays of sunlight have obviously touched, you know, the realm, and it's looking pretty out there. Nonetheless, stay tuned in listening to your favorite Sunday morning programming here on your number one talk radio station of Eagle FM. Enjoy the rest of your programming in our company. We'll see each other again during the course of this week, most definitely on the Home Run, with yours truly myself and with my partner in crime, obviously that being Helmut. And we'll catch each other again next weekend on my Sunday morning take. Enjoy the rest of your program in our company and stay tuned for more relaxing musical break after this.